Oh, yo, what's up, everybody? It is Justin, and we are back with another episode of the CHH-ish podcast. And we are privileged, and this is my first time speaking to him, talking to B Nice, who was a collegiate athlete in basketball, a former Harlem Globetrotter, and now he's doing some public speaking, some voiceover, some content creation, and he raps. So let's wait for B Nice to join us in the chat. What's up, Mitch? What's up, Fast Break? Oh, I see B Nice. He's in here. Hey, man, just request to go live. Let me write a little caption at the bottom. And all right, so for everyone tuning in, we are going live with Be Nice. Right, here we go. Pin the comment. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Yo,
What's going on?
what's up, man? Good to meet you on
Yes,
the interwebs.
likewise. Yes, sir.
So how you doing? How's everything going?
Yeah, things are good. Things are going good. It's starting to warm up a little bit here in the Carolinas, so it's been
Oh
good.
man,
It's been good.
I'm in New York, so it just snowed 2 days ago. There's still ice melting. It was like 23,
Yes.
like 28 degrees this morning.
You know, it's funny you say that because I was telling somebody, I think, I don't know if it was Tuesday, I think it was Monday. Monday we had a lot of rain. It was really bad. And I told somebody, I said, you know, in hindsight, I'm kind of glad this is just rain because had it been snow, had it been a little bit colder, that would have all been snow. And yeah, I'm in the Carolinas, we don't do snow. People lose their mind. They don't know how to
I
act.
know
So.
everything shuts down. Everything shuts down in Nashville and in Texas for like an inch of snow.
Yeah, I mean, even most recently, a couple months ago, towards the end of last year, just the threat of potential rain and freezing over like ice, like schools were shut down, and it didn't even rain that day. So that's where we're at.
Okay, I got you. Well, we're heading out of it, thank God.
Yeah.
So for everybody tuning in right now, my name is Justin Sarachik. I'm the editor of Rapzilla. This man in front of me is B Nice, rapper, former collegiate athlete, Harlem Globetrotter, well, former Harlem Globetrotter as well, content creator. He's currently a juice man. He's got the juice. We'll get into that. So I saw that you got your name B Nice because of like your smile and your attitude when being recruited. So and I know you're bringing lots of joy on your platform too, so it just fits very nice, and that's helped you kind of build this impressive resume that you got.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's been, you know, genuinely, God has been good. It's wild just to look back on all the things that I've been able to do already. You know, I'm still working in a college town, and so I'm a lot around a lot of, you know, 18 to 22-year-olds, and I have a few of them I mentor, and some I've been mentoring since they've been in middle school. And it's funny that some of them forget that, like, I'm well into my 30s now, you know, and so it's just like, you've done so much, but yet I also feel like you're just so young. And I think it's probably just the spirit that God has given me, you know, just how I am, just with everything that I do. So, no, genuinely, I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, man, and I feel that too, 'cause I'm 35 and I feel like, oh man, I wasted so much time. And then I talk to people that are older than me and they're like, oh, you still have like another, 50 years, like to
Yeah,
figure
right.
things out, or like 45 years. I'm like, I guess that's a valid point. But you know, when you're young, especially if you're an athlete, and you know, I used to do lots of sports too, you feel like the body's getting older, but you forget that you
Yes.
still have your mind for a while, even though maybe you can't touch rim anymore or
Right.
something like
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, but my mind still thinks it's in his 20s, and my body has to say, whoa, hold on, player. You're not there. You're not there anymore. So, but no, it's good, just being able to still have, I tell people 30s is a good sweet spot because I have a lot of community that are both younger than me and older than me. And, feeling like I have the wisdom of 40 and 50 and beyond, but also a little bit of youth still of 20s and early 30s, just kind of, it's a nice sweet spot.
And actually, I forgot to introduce the show. This is the CHH-ish podcast. It's conversations with CHH, not necessarily about CHH, but of course we get into it because you're an artist and we got to talk about the music. We got to talk about the good stuff. So
Absolutely.
I kind of want to walk through your career a bit. So I had read that you saw a Harlem Globetrotters. Is it a show, event? What would, it's a show,
Yeah,
right?
it's most accurately described as a show.
Okay.
Yes.
An athletic show.
Yes.
So you saw a Harlem Globetrotter show, and specifically you remembered the name Curly Bow Johnson, and that helps kind of spark your love for basketball. So without getting into your time with the Globetrotters, because we'll get there, what did that performance mean to you when you were just like 8 or 9 years old, and how did that set you up to like on your path to, yeah, I'm gonna try to play basketball?
Yeah, so I grew up, my dad was a high school basketball coach, girls basketball in Augusta, Georgia, and so I've always been around the game. He played Division I basketball at South Carolina State, and so the game, me being in the game, was kind of just, I was already around it. In North Augusta, South Carolina, there's a really big high school travel ball tournament, AAU, called the Peace Gym. A lot of people in the basketball world are familiar with it. And so like that was the gym that I literally played rec ball in. So I, was always around basketball. And so the thing that the Globetrotters, I think, triggered for me was this idea of the fun in basketball. So what came a few years later, after that Globetrotter show, was obviously, it's interesting because it's All-Star Weekend. In 2000, is the famous dunk contest with Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady, Steve Francis, you know what I'm saying? And so just seeing the game in a different era. And, you got to think, so all of these things are kind of happening in a nice little snowball. So I had my first experience with the Globetrotters, late 90s. You have Vince Carter and his showing, and then you started to see the and one movement start to pick up in the early 2000s as well. So it's wild to think how, just a completely different era of basketball, really started around there. And the Globetrotters for me was my introduction to it all.
Yeah, it's probably a little more like non-conventional way of getting into basketball, but I think obviously it's probably amazing for people who aren't into basketball to then kind of understand it, right? It's like a gateway drug to to basketball or to sports. All right, so I'm assuming you went on and you played high school ball, and then you moved on to Clemson. Your team was in the mix in Clemson, and there you won a dunk contest, or you, I saw that you won one, you came in third in another one.
So every year for the opening weekend of college basketball, it's, most teams have what's known as a Midnight Madness, which is like a big pep rally. And so they'll have like a scrimmage game, a couple different skits and stuff like that, but they'll also have like a dunk contest. And so had the dunk contest every single year. So we officially had a dunk contest my junior and senior year of college. We had just kind of a dunk showcase with no judges my freshman and sophomore year. But I think it's safe to say that if we had one, just based off of crowd reaction, I would have won. I think I feel pretty confident in saying that. But I got the opportunity to be a part of the official college slam dunk contest my senior year So the Final Four was in New Orleans, and so they invited 8 seniors to come participate in that dunk contest. Yeah, shout out Marcus. Yeah, they definitely robbed me of that dunk contest. There's a long story there, but honestly, I was just glad to be there because the contest was on a Thursday night in New Orleans, and we'll come back to that comment. It was on a Thursday night in New Orleans. I got the call on Tuesday to be in the dunk contest. And so they booked my flight, went early Wednesday morning. And so I got a chance to go do that. And that was amazing. I got a chance to, I got third in that contest. Had I made it to the finals, I had a few more dunks still up my sleeve. If for whatever reason we got to, dunk offs and things like that. I had already coordinated with somebody. I was going to have somebody throw me alley-oop from the stands. And so just kind of, I was a student of it. I loved it. But it's funny. I see one of my former Globetrotter teammates in the mix, Spider, Darnell Wilkes, who played at Cincy. And he was a high flyer. Back in my day, I would love to believe that I would have beat Darnell in a dunk contest, but he also had some, he was smooth with it. So, I shout out to him. Appreciate you listening in.
So it's funny. And anytime I talk to like an artist and they happen to play basketball or they had played basketball, they always talk like a good game. Like, oh, I'm the best ball player in CHH. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. You play college and you were a Globetrotter. So, mm-hmm. That might fall to you. Will you gladly accept that, or do you just know like, yeah, it's me?
So I will glad. So it's interesting. It's an interesting like balance. I almost feel like in some ways it's not fair because I had the opportunity to play, college basketball. So. Let's see, not the very first year, but the second year of Holy Smoke Fest, I got a chance to play in the game. So I'm playing with other artists. And so that was really fun because I was kind of a hidden gem for a handful of people until they realized, because on the original flyer, it had my government name, Brian Narciss. And so a lot of people know me, but don't know me. And then somebody... Aaron Knight got the idea to change it to Be Nice. And then as soon as that happened, it was like so many people on the other side were like, wait, hold on. No, you cannot have him. And so, but that was fun. I tell you who can really, really play that I saw and in firsthand, Tori Deshaun.
I knew you
Tori were. And,
I've played
Tori, with you. Tori and I have had many back and forth about that. We, in that game, we had a good exchange, but I saw him that first year, he was getting off and, but there's a lot of people. Yeah. A lot of people within CHH that talk a good game. Honestly, I wish that there were more opportunities, for stuff like that, because honestly, it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's just fun. There's something different that is, not as serious, but it builds community.
Yeah. Yeah, you know who's actually really nice too with the touch at least. Ooh. He'll be the first to admit he's not moving as well these days. But Derek Minor.
Heard Derek is really good with it, and unfortunately we have not played. But I've definitely heard my fair share of Derek stories. Okay. So.
Okay. Yeah, maybe one day we'll get to play. I have nothing left, but I give you the hustle points though. I always play good defense.
Yeah. But I feel you. You know what? You got to have those people on your team. And when I tell people, like when I was at Clemson, that was my role. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, yes, when you see me playing a pickup game, I'm able to do a lot more, but you got to know your role. I did what I needed to do to fit a role to contribute to the team when I was at Clemson. I was by no means a massive starter. And so it's also very funny whenever I'm on Twitter and I hear all these people talking about, oh man, like if I could play in the NBA, like I could do what, you know, Jared Dudley does. I'm like, I promise you, you cannot. I promise you're not. Like he may look the way, you know, he does compared to a LeBron, but you got to think he practices against LeBron every single day. I think it was Brian Scalabrine that did his little tour of like, you know, and so it's so tough, like at that level.
Yeah, I've had this conversation like a lot with some of my friends. It's like the worst athlete in any major league sport will smoke the best athlete you know. And it's like, and to put it even in baseball terms, you could take a 50-year-old pitcher who's never batted before, and you could bat him third, make him play shortstop, and he'll be the best guy in the league. So it's like, and it's like, this is not even the skill that he ever did. But you're a major league player. So you got there for a reason. Yes. I love that conversation. All right. So speaking of that, since I feel like I'm having like the Uncle Rico moments talking about back in my day.
It happens. Yeah.
So what is your back in my day game? Like what's the best game you ever had where you were just like, this is what I'm telling my grandkids about that I did this.
I have a few. So the most recent one that I can think of is, you know, whenever somebody finds out that I was a Harlem Globetrotter, they'll ask, you know, like, well, what was your, you know, signature move? What was your thing with the Globetrotters? And it's so hard to say this with a straight face, but this was genuinely my move. And if he's still in the chat, Spider, you got to vouch for me on this. My signature move was a windmill dunk from the free throw line. Oof. And exactly right. So that, needless to say, I did that a couple times. And you know, maybe about a month into the tour, you know, I'm doing that. You know, I'm a 1 foot jumper and constantly having to jump off that 1 foot. You know, it was a lot of wear and tear. And so I could not do that the entire time. But when I had my signature move, that was my signature move. So that was one. I tell people that I left high school with a 44-inch vertical. So that's another one. You know, I had 6'6". I'm 6'6". I had a 7-foot-inch wingspan.
Dang.
Or 7-foot wingspan and a 44-inch vertical. And so that'll get enough people in a gym going, who is that? You know, all the way up to, you know, eventually getting the scholarship to a place like Clemson. I didn't get my scholarship offer to Clemson, by the way, until 2 months before I graduated high school. Oh, so, you know, everything doesn't always happen on the timeline people expect it. You see people signing early and, you know, with all these different, you know, D1 offers that they're choosing from. Like I had other D1 offers, but Clemson was my only Power 5 offer that I had coming out of high school. And it didn't come until 2 months before I graduated high school. So senior season was already over. Played in my all-star games, everything, and it just, just God really opened the door. It's kind of an interesting story, but I got to college at 17, and so that, you know, there was the thought of whether or not I was going to go prep school route, but, you know, it was looked upon based on who Clemson was losing at that time that I'd be a really good fit, and so I'm thankful to the coach at the time, Oliver Purnell, for taking a chance on me, so.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then you gave me, Justin, you talking, you know, about the 44-inch vertical and being 6'6". Again, that had me feeling just like a regular person. Because when I would play with all of my friends, I'm about 6'2", and my vertical was probably like 29 inches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could grab rim, dunk on, you know, a dunk every once in a while, depending on how high the rim was in the park we were playing. And then everyone's like, oh, that's amazing. And then you're like 16, 17 inches more than that. And like 4 inches tall. Everything's in perspective.
Yeah, it is.
But did you have aspirations to go pro, or were you more like practical, or, you know, what's that?
Yeah. So, you know, so high school, I had the goals and dreams to go pro. And then I got the opportunity to play at a place like Clemson. And I think within the first month of just practicing, so you get to a place like here we go. So it's already hard enough playing, you know, college ball, even harder to play D1, even harder to play at a place like, Clemson or ACC. So we're in the same conference, Duke, North Carolina at the time, Maryland, Florida State, Miami. We got competition, every single night in the ACC. And so I'm going against guys that are, ACC, players, like all ACC caliber players. And you realize, especially that freshman year, just how much of a curve, like a growth curve there really is. Like you think you know about, what it takes to perform at this level, and the work ethic is different. The IQ is different. It's just, a whole different game. And so I quickly realized after my freshman year that and this is kind of the dangerous thing too, when it comes to sports, in general in college, I wanted to quit after my freshman year. I didn't want to transfer. I wanted to quit. Because honestly, at that point, I had accomplished my goal, planned, college ball. And thankfully, I stuck it out for 4 years. But I realized, I realized quickly that I learned what I was able to get from basketball.
Yeah.
I didn't love the game enough to go beyond, college, or so I thought. Right. Obviously, I got the opportunity, that came up with the Globetrotters, but, I've had people that I've been able to counsel and, guide and say, hey, if you have a goal and a dream of wanting to play in college ball, you better love the sport. I don't care if someone is paying you a full scholarship to go to this massive, school, big time school, it is very much an investment. And so, even if you, at the time were not seeing any of the money was getting, paid on your behalf to go to the school to pay, on scholarship, there is money being invested in you being at that college program. And so for me, I quickly realized okay, I've got to find a sense of love and joy to remain here doing this.
Yeah.
And for me, what carried me through those final 3 years was I started through my church. I started leading a small group, and I have access to, 24-hour, gyms, high quality facilities through Clemson. And the summer between my freshman and sophomore year, I've spent so much time just playing on a blacktop with sixth graders. Now, I did not broadcast that to my coaches, but it allowed me to get my love of the game back. It allowed me to remind myself that this is, at the end of the day, just a game. It's hard when you're playing college ball, and especially nowadays, man, I can't even imagine. You think about 18 to 22, 23-year-olds that have grown men, grown, people, talking about how you messed up my parlay, last night, know, with college athletics. And it's like, I'm just trying to play a game. Not to mention, especially college athletes having to worry about, things at home, their studies, just a life,
and having to
maintain all of that at such a young age. It's a lot of pressure. And so I always commend any, athlete that I get a chance to talk to, just, hey, you got to enjoy what you do, because if you're finding your expectation to or external validation based off of what is happening, it's wild. You can't do it. It's not going to sustain you. And ultimately, the very thing that you look to validate you can invalidate you if you give it enough time.
Yeah. No, that's great advice. Anyone watching this or is going to watch the replay of this later, that's a college athlete. These are words you need to live by. So now coming out of that, you kind of said you found, somewhat of a purpose while you were in college, right?
Yep.
So, but then the Globetrotters, which I didn't even know that how this worked, they just drafted you.
Yes.
So it's like you get called, hey, we're drafting you to the Harlem Globetrotters. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you entered some sort of draft or lottery, right, for it?
Right, no.
So how did that work? They just saw you and were like, we want this guy.
So at that point, I can't remember how often they had done it, but, they they've been having a draft for a little while, but one of the big places they draft from was the College Slam Dunk Contest. And so I got third, and then the guy who won it, we both got drafted. And so the guy, I believe his name's Kenny, the guy who got second, he was already going and playing overseas. So it was kind of one of those things where, you know, when you get drafted, it's more or less just a formal official invitation to come try out. And so very honored to do so. I tell people the tryout was not bad. The tryout was, you know, about 3 hours in the gym and, you know, a 30-minute interview. Once that happened, they offered me a position with the team, and then I was invited to training camp. Now, training camp for the Globetrotters was a whole different story. Training camp was 9 hours a day for a week in the gym. And so just and that and then in the evening you're learning about, you know, media training, you know, just learning how to engage with people because, you know, you're traveling literally all over the world. So learning how to navigate different cultures, different things like that. And so I joke with people and tell them, you know, not a bad first job out of college, you know, getting a chance to travel and do, you know, play with the Harlem Globetrotters. And so it was really cool, you know, just being able to do that. But they recruited very heavily from the College Slam Dunk Contest. They recruit from other parts of the sports world. I can't remember if my year was also the year they drafted Usain Bolt,
It
which
was.
again is just it,
I was looking before, and I was like, that's
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah, so you know, and the thing is, being in the, you know, the entertainment business, you know, sometimes opportunities like that become enticing and people want to, you know, check it out, you know, come see what the Globetrotters are about, and this is like, hey, a formal invitation to come do so. So
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And you did it for what, like less than a year? So was it just like, all right, I've done like 200 dates of this and I'm exhausted sort of deal?
yeah, so I did it for a year, and I tell people I played more games in my 1 year with the Globetrotters than I did my 4 years at Clemson. If you want to put into perspective of how much I played, that's my stat, is I played more games in that 1 year. Another fun thing that I always mention because of that year with the Globetrotters, so because I say that everybody knows I grew up in South Carolina, you know, a lot of times I'll do my two truths and a lie. And I will throw in there that I experienced a white Christmas. Now, of course, we did not have that in South Carolina, but my year with the Globetrotters, I had to fly up to Green Bay, Wisconsin to
Oh.
start our North American tour. And so I most definitely experienced a white Christmas. And so from my first couple of games of the Globetrotters, you know, were right around between, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas. And we did games over in Afghanistan. I got a chance to go just do military tour. We did military tour games. And so that was really cool. Really small world. Got a chance. I only played middle school ball for 1 year. And I ran into one of my middle school basketball teammates who was stationed at one of the places that we went to.
Wow.
And so just, it's crazy, you know, going literally across the world with the game of basketball. And then we did about 4 months of games in across North America, and then did a week in Egypt. You know, I got a chance to see the pyramids and everything. And then finally, you know, just, you know, that was kind of the it. That was kind of it for my Globetrotter career. And while I traveled a lot, it went by fast.
Yeah. What were you like 21, 22?
So I was officially 22 when we started playing games. So yeah, on the road, 22, just, you know, living out of a suitcase.
Man.
It, you know, tour life, you know, whether it's for an athlete, whether it's for, you know, an
You were in a
artist,
band.
tour life is no joke.
You were
Wait.
basically in a
I
world
tell
tour.
people
You did a
I
world
played a
tour.
show I played a show in Vegas.
You did a world
So yeah.
tour. You were a world touring band.
Yes.
So now what, and I know you pretty recently left, but what about your time with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes? You know, what was that all about? And then ultimately, why did you leave to kind of enter this next part of your journey, of your world tour?
Yes, absolutely. The you know it's my time with FCA was it was special and still is, you know, in some ways, to I was on staff with Fellowship of Christian Athletes, FCA, for 10 years. And, you know, FCA was the ministry when I was in high school that ultimately allowed me to have a relationship with Christ. I realized that basketball, as good as it was God of my life. And I had to fully surrender that. And I learned through serving at various FCA camps, even while I was in high school, just the impact of using my platform, using my influence. Because so many people, like I said, you know, at that point, I was an active college athlete serving at a lot of these camps, and I'm able to, you know, have, you know, middle schoolers, high schoolers in like my small group at these camps, and I'm able to, you know, kind of put them on the game about like, hey, this is the things that I've experienced as a college athlete.
Yeah.
These are the things that, you know, what it looks like to navigate that, because many of them have those goals and aspirations to do so. And SCA was so much just a blessing to me to be able to grow as what it means to be a Christian man. You know, a man of God, truly rooted in the word and, you know, finding community in the local church. I'm so thankful for FCA. FCA is actually how I met my wife. Nice. She used to be on staff with FCA. And so just, yeah, the doors and avenues that God opened up through the ministry of FCA are, you know, so many beyond words and beyond anything that I could count. And so I spent 10 years, the last seven, been here at Clemson University serving, you know, as an advisor for our student group of FCA here, which is interesting. They're actually meeting right now. I'm actually at the place where we're meeting, but I'm away, you know, right now. But there's about 800 college students gathered in a room right now, just wow, worshiping right now. So it was a real special place for me. And that's a cool part about my story is, you know, FCA at Clemson is primarily non-student athletes. But for me, it was cool because I got a chance to grow in what it truly means to be just a man of God and having community with people who didn't just see me as a basketball player. You know, when you're at a level like Clemson, a lot of people only want to have basketball conversations. And I recognize it comes with the territory, but like, I'd love to tell you about what the Lord is doing in my life. And also just, hey, these are areas I'm struggling in. These are things that, you know, I'm learning. And so FCA was very much a ministry that did that. And so being able to come back and kind of serve as an advisor for the student group has been very special. So I'm still kind of serving in a volunteer role.
Okay.
But the step of obedience for me was to trust the Lord. And it was definitely taken prayerfully, you know, through prayer and fasting. This was honestly the first time I felt the Lord prompt me into fasting about a big decision. And, you know, my wife and I, we fasted, you know, back in the fall, and just really felt the Lord leading me into a season of freelancing as a creative. And I, you know, it's wild. You get to a place eventually, you know, as a believer, when unfortunately, you could drift into what's known as functional Christianity, and you're not really dependent on the Lord. And I think what is being shown to me is just being able to experience the Lord in a brand new way in this season. And, you know, I'm still not too far removed, you know, like I said, from my FCA family. And so it's cool to still be able to kind of serve them and volunteer in a volunteer capacity, but also in continuing to walk in what I believe the Lord has for both me and my wife.
Yeah, awesome, man. And, you know, it's I joked about this in the DMs when I originally hit you up last year to have a conversation, and it didn't happen, but it seems like right now is the perfect time.
Absolutely, so, absolutely perfect timing.
Amazing. All right, so, all right, here's the million-dollar question. What's your fascination with juice? Tell us.
Yes.
I mean, delicious. Yes.
Yes.
So tell us about it.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. The seed for this has been planted long since, you know, high school. We used to always just have an expression amongst our team, you know, just we want to be people who share the juice, you know, so always bring the energy. In my high school career, you know, I never lost the overtime game. You know, we never lost But ironically, you know, my high school career ended on a last second shot where I was like, if we were going to overtime, we knew we were going to win. The problem is they hit a shot before overtime in regulation. And so it's like, well, that's how it ended. They did not give us a chance. So it's all good. But the fascination and the thing that I think the Lord has really been putting on my heart with this whole Juice concept was it started out as a music project back in 2021. And so, you know, I've been a part of a few Patreons. So I got a shout out to my guy, Ruslan. So Ruslan, you know, he has, you know, Fan Love Fridays and, you know, was really just getting, trying to get artists, you know, to put out music or just like put music out. And part of it was, you know, he was offering feedback to people. And so like, I got back into a season of writing very frequently. And so I was constantly sending him stuff. And then constantly, you know, just putting out singles. And then next thing you know, I went to Holy Smoke the very first year. And what happened was I felt, you know, just the Lord kind of put the concept of just the Juice Box on my heart. And the idea is, you know, a juice box doesn't really, it's not, you know, usually a lot of juice in there. But it's very refreshing. You know, the idea is very nostalgic, but it made me think about just being a person where like that just refreshes others. Okay. And so, and the idea of the Juice Box projects was like, hey, I'm always working on stuff, but here's a little something to hold you over. So I did a Juice Box 1, you know, and then I did a Juice Box 2, originally put together a Juice Box 3, which technically still is done, but I now understand this is the first project that I could genuinely say, hey, I finished it, but it never came out. I don't know if it ever will come out. We'll see. But what came from that was just a deeper understanding, I think, of the idea and the concept of fruit as a whole. And I you know, kind of the juice is born out of, you know, we're called to bear fruit. And I feel like to get from the process of, you know, fruit to juice, you know, there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of things in this world. You know, you heard my story, you know, of everything that I've dealt with when it came to basketball, when it came to life in general, and just learning that juice is something that comes on the other side of, you know, whatever you've been through. You know, it's essentially your testimony, it's your message, you know, the thing that stirs you up and really gets you going. And so I'm thankful to be able to share juice in so many capacities and be able to help other people find theirs. And I know that with this last season, you know, towards the end of FCA, you know, I learned something even greater about the idea of fruit in that no matter, you know, because a lot of times as believers, we talk about, oh, you know, they'll know you by your fruit. They'll know you by, you know, like your fruit. And we got to be very careful about how we say that. I understand the heart behind it, but I think a lot of times if we just go based off of what we see, we could miss that somebody may not be in the season that has them bearing fruit as we would, you know, identify it. Yeah. Meaning, no matter, there's no amount of obedience, there's no amount of effort, there's no amount of striving that's going to produce the same visual kind of fruit that you see in the spring in December. But that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the tree. It just isn't the season. And so what does it truly mean to be fruitful? It means to abide. And that you can't see. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're just looking on the external for, you know, what somebody's fruit is, you know, you're going to possibly think, oh, well, somebody isn't, you know, bearing fruit or they're not doing this. But I think when it comes to, you know, to spending time with people, you actually doing life with people, and you're especially people who have, you know, experienced a lot of life, experienced a lot of, you know, heartache, experienced a lot of, you know, pain, pressures that the world has, because, you know, social media only tells part of the story. We all know this. And so many people are quick to, you know, offer their opinions, offer their insight to things that they don't even know the full story about. But I think what's beautiful is, somebody who is truly operating in, full alignment to what they know the Lord is stirring in there, when they're truly abiding with the Lord and where they have them. So like for me, I can think all the way back to elementary school, and the Lord has wired me to be a storyteller. I was on the newspaper staff when I was in middle school, high school. I got my degree in communication studies, obviously doing music and, speaking, sharing my story, testimony, and things like that. I know that this is something that the Lord has uniquely wired me for. And I think in this season, I've learned to lean into that, in a unique sense, especially in a digital, the digital environment that we live in. I feel like there's so many opportunities just to connect with people, to help people feel seen, feel heard. And it's because there's just a lot of broken people in the world. And, how can I use what I know God has put inside of me, the fruit and the juice, to honestly just impact others, to encourage others.
Yeah, that's so good, man. So good. And you do that with the way you've been rolling out your content too. It's a lot of, I saw you had like detailed it out, I think on Twitter, right? You did a thread and like, this is why I did this. I would encourage everyone to go check out his Twitter or his Instagram and just see the way that he lays out and formats the content. It's super dope.
Thank you.
And we could probably spend a whole nother episode just talking about that strategy.
I would love to. We'll make it part two.
we could do something again. All right. Well, you mentioned, just hip hop and then within your basketball career. So how did rap music sort of like intertwine with your basketball career? Were you rapping in high school and college? Were you messing around? Like what was that journey?
Yes. So started out doing poetry when I was in middle school. I told you I was a writer. So, always been a storyteller in that sense. But like my mom was, very artistic, very much a writer. And so when I got to high school, it eventually became, remixes and, writing my own raps and things like that. And so, I can remember the early days of, Franklin, of just Fred Hammond, Canton Jones, way back once upon a time. And then I get to high school, it's the Lecrae, the early days of After the Music Stops, hearing those at different events and things like that. And so when I started making music, I did a remix for a pep rally my senior year and rapped it. It was like a remix to Walk It Out or Two Step or something, and performed it live in front of everybody. And so that was fun. And then when I got to college, I actually started doing mixtapes and got a chance to connect with a guy, Ben Huffer, just a student that had a setup in his apartment. And so we would go just record and do stuff. And so it was always just something that I had kind of in the background.
Yeah.
But finding other people that kind of helped bring the dream to life. I got connected with so many people over the years. I got a chance to link up with Doc Watson, who is a massive help, the big, pioneer within the CHH space. And so I got connected with him, and, he got me connected to Dirty Rice. And so I got a chance to connect with a lot of people just over the years when it came to, just making my rounds, with people when it came to, like my early days of hip hop. And so, it's funny, actually, now that from a timing standpoint, so my year with the Globetrotters was 2013. I had done some projects at that point. But I think I vividly remember entering a contest. It was more or less like a Hot 16 contest with Rapzilla, and I actually won it. So I won a contest while I was on the road with the Globetrotters. And part of my prize, and this is the interesting part of this, part of my prize was to, I think I got like a free music video. And I remember going and shooting it with Space Cherry Films And I think that's when I realized, very similar to basketball, is you can have all the skills in the world, but when it comes to kind of making that next step, when it comes to like the business side of music, you gotta want to do that too. Uh-huh. Similar to, you know,
yep, absolutely.
When it comes to basketball, you can have the skills, but you know, do you want to show up at 6 a.m. for conditioning when you know you're not getting playing time? Do you want to have to go through the paces of, you know, you're not strong enough to hang with the upperclassmen and things like that? Like it's all a parallel. And so for me with music, I enjoy writing. I enjoy making it. I would say right now I'm not as deep in pursuing it. And I know for some people who, like I mentioned, who still may be waiting on that Juicebox 3, it may be a heartbreak to them, but just kind of understanding the season of life that I'm in and then kind of approaching, you know, it's music is always going to be in me. It was going to be something that I'm connected to. But yeah, that's kind of a little bit of my story and overview.
Yeah, man, that's dope, because it's funny. So you were technically kind of working with Rapzilla in some mm-hmm. sort of capacity before I even knew what Rapzilla was.
Wow.
And then awesome. I didn't get with Rapzilla till like the end of 2015.
Okay.
Space Cherry Films is Will Thomas, mm-hmm. right? And Will Thomas is like one of my best friends now over the last couple of years. And we're working on stuff. So okay. you work with everyone I'm affiliated with. You knew them mm-hmm. before me and you worked with them. But I didn't know you. We didn't know each other.
Okay. All now, good. Yeah, yeah. In due timing. Yes.
Okay. So I guess you kind of alluded to this a little bit. What's next for you musically, creatively? I saw you said you wanted to do some voice acting too.
Yeah.
Which a whole nother beast, I'm sure.
So what I've started to realize, and I'll think back to a lot of feedback that I've gotten over the years, even with all the years that I've done music, I've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, they love the beat choices that I have. And weirdly enough, like, yes, like I'm one of those that like, I like to have a good flow, but I also like to weave in a lot of wordplay into stuff.
Yeah.
And so, but I learned in the, you know, kind of these recent iterations of Juicebox, you know, you kind of have to have a little bit of both. You have to have like the deep lyrics where people, you know, like if they run it back a yep. couple times, they'll catch something new. But it also has to be palatable on the first listen. It has to just be like, you know, something that, okay, oh wow, this is just easy to listen to. I can rock with this. But for me, I would say the other thing that people mentioned that they enjoyed about my music was my voice and just kind of how I presented it. And so that's part of kind of what got my wheels spinning of like, you know, because of my story with the Globetrotters, with Clemson and things like that, most people, whenever they, you know, hit my line to book me for something, they're not booking me to come rap. They're booking me to come speak. They're booking me to come share my story and things like that. And so, but I realized that I always have a bend towards, you know, understanding music of how things flow and stuff like that. And so I realized, how can I use that, you know, kind of the awareness that I have when it comes to music and the passion that I still do have for it, and kind of use that, almost going back to my roots with spoken word and poetry and things like that, to connect people, because I know how to engage an audience. I know how to connect with people. You know, how can I maybe even find a way to take my passion with music and almost in a shorter version, use it in a like a quicker motivational setting type deal. So that's what I've been most recently doing, you know, kind of with like, we'll call it the voice acting. And so like the, you know, just writing different stuff that you see on a Nike ad, Adidas ad. I mean, that's very musical in the pacing of it and how it's delivered and things like that. I had a good conversation with another friend of mine who's in videography, and just the ability to capture a moment or create a moment. That's essentially what musicians do. And so how can I do that, but more so just purely like motivational, purely just, you know, spoken. And so that's kind of what I'm navigating right now. I really don't know how, you know, like the, here we go. The easiest translation or core connection would be like, I'll think of them almost like mini sermon jams, okay. But more so just like, they tend to be more like advertisements. Like, you know, I made a Adidas ad last week, you know, a spec ad, and, you know, I kind of been doing these little like 20 to 30 second little, you know, like, hey, I'll read a quote or something really quick, and then kind of have, you know, music drop, you know, with it. And yeah. So I'm realizing, you know, things like that are very much up my alley, things that I enjoy, things that I'm passionate about. And so I'm like, I think just being consistent in that is probably going to be kind of what I'm going to be building going forward, at least in the immediate yeah. future.
And it's amazing that like we can do things like that now, mm-hmm. like whereas even 10 years ago, it's like, how did you make a spec ad, you know, in your house for a company?
Yeah.
Like, I just went into my room and I just recorded it. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, that's how easy all this stuff is to do now. And I uploaded it as a reel and it went viral, and then Adidas hired me. Like
right. Yep.
It's mm-hmm. it's so wild, man. Okay. And I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So I'm going to ask you the most controversial question of the entire conversation.
All right.
Before you go, give us your top five NBA players of all time.
Ooh, yes. The hard-hitting stuff to end.
This might be the moment, you know, when I upload clips later, that's going to get the most engagement and people yelling at each other. So, you know.
Of course. Okay, so top five, and I'm glad you framed up NBA players, because it's a conversation that has to be mentioned if anyone ever is talking about greatest of all time when it comes to basketball. If you don't have Kareem in your top three, I don't respect you, because he won at every single level. But you're much more likely for him to fall out of your top three, top five, you know, whatever, if you're just talking about NBA. So I'm glad you framed it up like that. Top five NBA for me, I'm going to go no order to kind of give myself a cop out.
No.
All right. Well, let's get the top five. Let's get the top five. And then we'll try to order it. All right. So top five, I think you got to have MJ. I think you got to have LeBron. Top five, I think you have to have, if we're talking NBA, this is hard. Contextually, you know, you're conflicted whether or not you want to put Wilt or Bill in there, you want to put Kareem in there, you want to put Bird or Magic in there. I think if we're going to go in NBA, I'm much more likely, just purely from the center position, I think Shaq. I'm willing to put Shaq in the top five discussion, for the simple fact that he literally changed the game. And so we'll go and yes, recency bias, we'll say MJ, LeBron, Kobe, Shaq, and I almost want to put Magic and Bird in there as a duo. I'm gonna put top five NBA all time. Man,
you do a lot of public speaking, and you know your yes. story well. But you were not prepared for this one.
I was not prepared for this question.
I did not.
So I will probably go. I'll go Kareem, just because it's okay.
I don't disagree with anyone you said. You know, okay. All of those people are at least in the top 10 mm-hmm. for sure, arguable. Yeah. And
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you didn't mention anyone out of pocket, like just like, because there's always somebody who's like, you know. And this is not a shot. I'm just
no, no, I know.
Name I thought of.
Yes.
Dame Lillard, you know, top five all
Right,
time.
yeah,
You're just,
no.
you're a Trailblazers
He's,
fan, man. That's
yes,
what happened.
exactly. Which, you know, don't get me wrong, like if we're talking greatest Blazer, if you're recent memory, okay, I can see why you would say that. And even still, I don't think I would say him. I might go Drexler. I mean, Drexler at least got him to the finals, but you know, that's just me.
There's so many caveats and stuff, and it's like, oh, the guys in the 50s and 60s were playing against plumbers. I'm saying, yeah, these plumbers probably still would have killed you.
Yeah,
That's
exactly.
just like,
Going back to our original
yeah,
conversation,
maybe
yes.
compared to the worst player in the league now, maybe, but it's still better than you. But
Yes.
yeah, so there's a lot of caveats. But all right, that was a good top five, though. I don't think anyone's gonna be like, this guy has doesn't know ball or
Right.
anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, it's always subjective. I have a whole thesis of, you know, whenever these arguments come up is we'll call it a lion and a unicorn debate. If I can just cook for a second, just on that. Yeah.
Go
All
ahead.
right. So when it comes to greatest of all time of anything, you know, especially in an athlete, you gotta decide whether or not you're more aligned with a lion or a unicorn. So here's what I mean. So let's take it to a different sport. Let's take it to football. Okay. So greatest of all time quarterbacks. Well, obviously you're going to look at your, you know, Tom Brady's. You're gonna look at, you know, your pure, you know, born to play this game. Like that, like they can't do anything else. They can't play another position. This is who they are. This is what they do. All right. Those are your Lions. All right. So your Lions, you know, your Jerry Rice at receivers, you know, your Emmitt Smith at running backs, your Tom Brady's at quarterbacks. Now, on the unicorn side is when you start making the case for a Michael Vick, a Bo Jackson, a Randy Moss, you know, guys that played the position, but they kind of changed the position based off of what we would normally perceive people at that position to do. So I fall under the initial, like when we talk about going back to basketball, MJ and all of the MJ disciples, Kobe, you know, of the like, are Lions. And so the Kobe, the MJs, the Larry Birds, I would almost, you know, in that era, like those were, you know, Lions. They were born to play basketball. That is purely all they were going to do. Versus your unicorns of LeBron. I'd even throw Wilt as a unicorn. Wilt was a freak of nature, just
55,
off the charts.
55 points per game, 30 rebounds a game.
Yeah, you know, and he's, you
Video.
know, however tall he is, you know, 7 foot running, you know, 4'3", 40, you know, like just don't do that. And so just, you know, when you think about, especially nowadays, you know, your Giannis's, your
Joker.
players that are just, so I would consider Joker, you know, as purely a basketball player. So he's going to be a lion. But yes, to that point, it's like the guys that just play the game. Now, granted, European players, you know, they play very much positionless basketball, so they bring a whole different style to the game. They have a different understanding of how the game is played, you know, especially if you get them in a good system that nurtures that. I mean, Jokic can literally yawn, wake up, and drop a triple-double. He's not even trying to, you know, be anything other than just a basketball player. That's just what he does. And so then you have guys that, you know, can go to a Super Bowl party, you know, on one night, 2 nights later, you know, they play in, you know, a sold-out game in Madison Square Garden, drop 40. You know, then have two more, you know, celebrity endorsements, you know, appearances in 2 days. And then, you know, they're just able to balance it all.
Harden. That's
Yeah,
James
man.
Harden.
Yeah,
Finally gets
right.
to that club after the
Yeah.
game.
Yeah. And I'm like, there's just some people that are just like, hey, I just want to hoop. I don't even care about all the other stuff. Like, I just want to hoop. But then there's other people that navigate the, you know, what it takes to kind of the side quest. Is almost what I'll call it. Even down to music, you know, you had Tupac doing the movies and things like that. You got Kendrick doing features with Taylor Swift and Imagine Dragons and all these people. And then you have, J. Cole, you have Biggie, who's very much just, I just want hip hop. That's all I want to say. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to do really anything outside of that. So I don't know. That's just something that a conversation that I typically have whenever the greatest of all time discussion comes up. So a little something next year.
Yeah, it's valid because you have people who just win, and maybe they're not the greatest, but if you win 10 times, you seem pretty great. Then you have people who are better than everyone else, but maybe they don't win. So how do you validate? It's kind of like the MVP debate. Is it the most valuable player, in the league, or are they most valuable because they help their team win?
Right.
So there's that too, and that's all semantics now. All right.
So yeah.
Anything? All right. I'll give you the final word. Anything else you want to add, mention, plug, let the people know where they can find you. And that's it.
Man. Yeah. So obviously, first of all, Justin, thank you so much for having me. Genuinely, I appreciate the conversation. It's been very fun. We'll definitely have to do it again at some point. But just find me online at Be Nice, just the letter B, Nice 21, on all platforms. The biggest thing that I would tell people is, kind of the thing that I've been chewing on personally is you can count the number of seeds in an apple, but you can't count the number of apples in a seed. So, don't sell yourself short. There's something inside of you that God wants to use and wants to do, and truly think that, it starts with knowing him. It starts with just completely surrendering your plans to him and trusting that he is, going to provide fruit in due season. And then when the pressures of life come to you and, weigh you down, hey, you always still got juice to share. So that's all I got.
You brought it right back. Very nice. Nicely done. All right. So for everyone, if anyone came in late or they're watching now, I'm going to re-upload this so you can watch the whole thing. I'm going to cut it up into clips. It'll be on YouTube. So this will not be the last of him. You will see him again. thank you so much, man. Awesome. I appreciate the time. Dope conversation. Like you said, it was super fun. And, keep us aware of what you got going on, because I know you got stuff going on. So just, shoot me a line and let us know.
I would definitely keep you in touch, man. I appreciate you.
All right, man. Have a good night. Thanks.
All right, you too. See ya.
All right, everyone. This was another episode of the CHH-ish podcast. So again, I'm going to re-upload this. This was Be Nice, and I'll see y'all next week.